Hey, good afternoon, Juneau. It's seconds before 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. I got a great lineup of guests. We're going to hear about a lot of wonderful events coming up this weekend. Christina Pollack will join us first, and she's here to tell us about Alaska Pella's concert. That's tonight. The Juneau Skating Club is standing by. They'll be here a little after 3, and we'll be talking to them about their season plans. Folks from the Gastineau Aero Modelers will be dropping in. They have a booth set up at the Nugget Mall all day Saturday, and I understand if you drop into the booth, you get a free glider. And Bernadette Rosano will be here from from the STEM Project, which is part of the local employment. Economic Development Council. There we go. I got that out. She's going to tell us about two programs or three that they have down there, and one of them is called So Electric, which sounds pretty interesting. Right now it's time for National Native News, and then we'll be back with our guests. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa is working to address the digital divide by improving the high-speed fiber optic network on the reservation in northern Minnesota. Statistics show only about 10% of Native American communities have access to broadband, fast, reliable internet service. As J.P. Rehnquist from WGZS reports, the tribe's initiative also includes a new program to provide technology training and, in some cases, free computers to its members.
Fred Underwood, Director of Technology Programs for Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, is overseeing a noisy crew of workers who are replacing servers and other network components inside the tribe's IT nerve center. This office suite is connected to the internet via a lightning-fast fiber-optic network, but nearby, many homes and businesses are still only able to connect to the internet via old-fashioned phone lines or cellular service, and some people don't have any phone or internet service at all. Underwood says that broadband connections can yield $1,000 to $5,000 a year in annual savings per household.
And that's savings. That's after you have to factor in what they spend for the internet. Well, that's just more of the divide that's happening in Canadian country.
With support from the Blandin Foundation's Rural Broadband Initiative, Fond du Lac Band is working to bridge that divide. This week, Fond du Lac Band will offer a series of trainings on how to use the internet, and up to 50 low-income participants will receive a free computer to take home through a partnership with PCs for People. PCs for People is a nonprofit organization that refurbishes donated PCs and shares them with low-income people throughout the Upper Midwest. Diane Soden-Groves, technology trainer for Fond du Lac Band, says that with even a little bit of training and a computer to access it, there is tremendous value in a good internet connection.
Whether it's filing a self-assessment tax, renewing your driver's license, or even banking online, if you don't have that opportunity, it puts you at a disadvantage.
The trainings will be held at the Fond du Lac Tribal Center, and they are open to the public. For National Native News, I'm J.P. Rehnquist.
A Native financial institution has received a six-figure grant from the Bush Foundation to create a workforce development program on a South Dakota reservation. Jim Kent has more.
The Four Bands Community Fund promotes entrepreneurship and business development on the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation, but Executive Director Tanya Fiddler says employee retention is one of the largest problems among businesses trying to succeed in that community.
Some of the contractors are completing 100 W-2s every year for a crew of 10 or 12. The turnover is so much or so high.
The Four Bands Community Fund plans to address this issue by educating employees about their responsibilities to their employer, as well as reminding employers about the challenges workers in a reservation community may face.
The average non-native, by the time they're 18, may have attended 3 to 5 funerals. For the average Native American child, they've attended upwards of 100 funerals.
Tanya Fiddler says understanding the unique cultural needs of their employees is vital to any business on the reservation. Native American employees, adds Fiddler, need to incorporate their employer into the holistic attitude of dedication to family and community maintained in traditional Lakota beliefs. Dependability, notes Fiddler, is the key to success in the workplace. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
In December 1970, President Richard Nixon signed a bill to return Blue Lake to Taos Pueblo in New Mexico. The lake and surrounding land was taken in the early 1900s by the federal government and became National Forest land. Taos Pueblo considers the area sacred and fought for its return. Blue Lake and surrounding mountains are off limits to everyone but Taos Pueblo members. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Kawanak Broadcast Corporation is accepting art for the Alaska Native Art Auction, February 20th, 2014 in Anchorage, Alaska. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event to buy art. Proceeds benefit National Native News. Learn more at knba.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's almost 6 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. A couple of quick announcements before we get into our conversation with our first guest. There is less than 1 hour to go to vote for Eagle Crest in Powder Magazine's Ski Town Throwdown. And we got to do it because at the Eagle Crest website, skijuneau.com, we're about 200 votes behind Crested Butte. So we need 200 people to just immediately go out and go to theskijuneau.com, follow the link, and vote for Eagle Crest. We gotta win this, folks. We gotta get on this thing. And speaking of winter weather wonderland and all that sort of stuff, that winter weather advisory that's been in effect for most of this week is in effect until 6 p.m. tonight. So for the rest of today, they're saying windy with rain, and that's mixed with snow, mostly north of the Mendenhall Valley. So driving in to the station from the valley earlier, it was raining on my windshield, and turning the slush into ice, I'm sure, is when it chills down a little bit. So tonight could be a little bit of a dicey drive home. Don't be one of those people in between the two lanes out in the median there. So my first guest is going to begin. We're going to start her with music. And since we have no idea what this is, here it comes.
Mama! For me, Mama, who gave me no way to handle things, who made me so sad. Mama, the weeping, Mama, the angel, no sleep in heaven or Bethlehem. Some pray that one day Christ will come a calling.
Well, that's a cappella singing. You heard no instruments there. The thumping of the what sounded like a drum was probably one of the players on stage actually doing that. The musical director of that group is sitting here with me in the studio, and Christina Pollack is planning, well, she's actually all planned, I guess. Tonight is a big concert up on campus at the rec center starting at, what, 5:30, I think?
7:30.
Mm-hmm. 7:30, okay. So tell me, define a cappella.
A cappella is wonderful.
Okay.
A cappella is singing without any other instruments. It's just the voice. What you heard, the thumping is beatbox, and that was done actually by one of our premier beatboxers, Darcy Derego. And that was Andrea Budbill actually doing that solo. She is awesome. Yeah, a cappella is amazing. It brings people together in a way that I've never seen any other group do. It's just fascinating.
Do you use a pitch pipe to get started?
I do. Okay. We used to just use a piano, but, you know, pianos can be notoriously out of tune in Juneau. So I've got a pitch pipe, and sometimes it takes a little bit longer than a piano to get the notes ready to go. But when the group can pull their notes from that one note, man, it's something.
I sing a little bit. Living inside a chord is an amazing experience. It's something non-singers never really catch, I think. But that's one of the beauties of this. So you're doing a concert tonight at 7:30. What kind of stuff are we going to hear?
Everything. Gosh, we're doing pop. We're doing, holiday classics mainly. But we are throwing a couple of non-Christmas things in there. We're also doing a beatbox battle in the middle. Just a little one, just a little taste. For those who like it, and then the people who don't like it don't have to sit through it too much. But we have a couple people that you're really going to want to hear.
How many folks are in Alaska Cappella at this
point? We've got 18 right now, and they're all fantastic.
All UAS students?
Almost. We've got a couple that are alumni, and we've got a couple that are college age, but not at UAS.
So the group forms up each semester? Is that is that how you do this?
Well, it's actually a school year long group, but we do audition every semester, and we actually have auditions coming up in January. It's going to be wonderful. We're looking for everybody. But yeah, we're actually starting to move towards school year long instead of semester by semester, especially this year with the tour coming up.
So how many tour?
Yeah, we're
going.
We're going on tour to Sitka during our spring break. It's wonderful. Our student government has completely helped us go. We really are just going to have a blast, sing to Sitka. We're going to be at the Nakahiti Center. I believe it's, now I'm going to forget, March 18th at about 7 p.m., and it's going to be amazing. We're also going to do a couple small concerts that I still need to set up between the time we get there on Sunday and the main concert on Tuesday. But, yeah, it's going to be really amazing.
Oh, so spring break in Sitka. So what else is planned for the spring season?
Well, we're really hoping to do a concert in April, hopefully with the Sound in Motion concert. But if that doesn't work out, we're going to do...
Sound in Motion is a UAS program that
awesome
goes on
series
throughout the year. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great series run by, I believe, now I'm going to say it wrong, but I know Katie Bosler heads it up.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. They bring in a bunch of different things. Usually the Juno Symphony does some stuff in there. There's Tidal Echoes. There's, gosh, everything. We've been in that the past 2 years, but it's really full this year. A lot of people are participating, so we might have to do a Saturday concert instead, just so that we're not at the end of semester. I know that's hard on a lot of our members when we have concerts during finals week and the week before, so maybe moving a little bit earlier would be better.
Christina, you're the musical director for Alaskapella.
Yes,
how
sir.
Long have you done that?
3 years now.
3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you were a music major for a bit and then decided when you came back that you would move toward accounting, is that?
Yes, sir, sure did.
And
I was actually looking into a math major for a little bit, and then I thought, oh, man, I hit calculus 2, and I was, I don't know. And I had to make a choice between either taking calculus 3 or continuing an accounting internship with L.G. Rayfield Mertz, and I stuck with the internship because it was just, oh, man, I love those guys.
So how comfortable are the accounting folks with your being a musical director on the side?
I'm not sure all of them know. I do it on my off
now.
Time. Yeah, I do it on my off time. I don't bring it to work. So it's, I kind of try and keep it all separated, so I'm super focused at work. And then when I'm at school, I'm super focused on school and, you know, Alaskapella. Then I can be super focused on Alaskapella. But it's hard to not think about Alaskapella all the time because I helped form the group, and it's just kind of been almost a little a baby to me because I've been nursing it this whole time. It's just, I love it. I love the group. It's just a part of me.
A cappella singing is real popular on college campuses. There are a number of nationally known groups that perform all over the country. We're lucky to have a good group here. Now, why do you suppose it's become so popular on the college campus scene?
I've got a theory. I think it's a way for people to get together that's inexpensive, number one, because you don't have to have any instruments. Number two, it's something that brings people together that not necessarily is on a campus. Like, for instance, we don't have a music major here. We don't have a music program at all, and it's just a way for us to have music. And number three, it's just a great way to get together and meet a bunch of different new people that you wouldn't meet otherwise. We have so many different types of people in the group. It's really cool.
Yeah. You're doing this concert now with Pops and some probably a lot of Christmas stuff. What's the total range of the group? I mean, what's the most? What are the extremes of the kind of stuff that you perform?
In terms of notes?
Like types of music.
Types of music. We've done. I wouldn't go so far as to call Mr. Brightside rap, but we've done some things with just slight rap. We'd like to do a little bit more with that. And we've done classical before. We've done things contemporary by Eric Whitaker. Our first year we did a piece. It was beautiful, Boy and a Girl. We've done, Lordy, we've done a lot. Pop, rock, classical. We've got a piece that we have not yet performed for the public. It's not going to be tonight, but maybe another time or even in another year. It's a parody piece about Star Wars called John Williams is the Man, and it's great. We do a lot. I'd love to get into barbershop. We've done foreign language pieces before, but I'd like to do more of that. I'm looking into doing an Italian piece from Portal 2. I don't know if you know the video game. It's by Valve, and it's fantastic. There's something called a turret opera at the end, and it's in Italian, and it's fantastic. And I'm thinking it would be fantastic to do with the group next semester. And things like that, just ways to bring in pop culture and keep everybody really super jazzed about a cappella singing and singing in general, but still be able to experience these different genres. You know?
I love the joy and enthusiasm in your voice when you talk about this. It's obviously your heart. The concert is 7:30 tonight in the Rec Center.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're asking for a $5 Goodwill donation at the door if you want to do that. But, of course, you folks are always welcome at the Rec Center up on campus. Right. Thank you so much. Listen to a little more of Alaska Pella.
Thank you.
They don't know how to go.
Is Bird Note. We used to think that Arctic terns traveled 25,000 miles a year, making them the long-distance champions of migration. However, with the advent of satellite transmitters and light-level geolocators, the terns were, for a time, knocked off their pedestal. Scott Widensall, author of Living on the Wind, explains.
We found that sooty shearwaters from Australia were traveling up to 40,000 miles a year.
But now, for the time being, the terns have regained the title.
More recently, scientists working with Arctic terns in Greenland and Iceland have discovered that some of those Arctic terns are traveling 47,000 miles a year. And now Danish researchers have found that their Arctic terns are traveling 53,000 miles a year. Even here in the Gulf of Maine, where we're sitting and talking, the Arctic terns that breed on the islands off Maine are traveling all the way down to the South Atlantic. Some of them are hooking around Africa and spending the winter in the Indian Ocean and then coming all the way back here. These kind of discoveries are going to accelerate as the technology gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Every one of these discoveries just makes the whole issue of bird migration all that more wonderful and awe-inspiring and almost literally unbelievable.
Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation. Hear more stories about the amazing migration of birds at our website, birdnote.org.
It's 18 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My great pleasure right now is to introduce a number of lovely ladies who are lining my studio across the way and made more lovely by the fact that all of them are skaters. So they bring their loveliness to the ice and put it out there for us to see. These are figure skaters, and this is part of the Juneau Skating Club. With me are Pam Leary, who's figure skating coordinator. Mm-hmm. And then Melissa Fritsch is here, and she brought a couple of star skaters with her, Catherine and Meredith Fritsch, who are a couple of the skaters in the group. So we have an event or a season coming up, I guess, of figure skating activity, right?
Yes, we're kind of at the second half of the skating season. We had two sessions. And one is just coming to an end, sadly, in a couple of weeks. But we are starting again with a third and fourth session January 6th with our basic skills programs as well as our figure skating programs. And the basic skills programs are the ones where we teach Juno how to skate from very, very beginners, tots, age 4 to 84. And then we advance them through the basic skills program, which is a building block type of skill development. And then skaters that graduate from that can go into figure skating or take it recreationally or play hockey if they want.
So, Catherine and Meredith, is this how you two came to skating?
Yes, we did. We first started skating in Rhode Island, where we lived, and then we came here and took lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we passed a bunch of levels, we were figure skaters, and we just kept skating.
So they were your students, Pam, after they got here and started up?
Yes, they were part of the basic skills programs, and we have a number of different coaches that teach, as well as student coaches, such as Meredith and Catherine, who also help out with the basic skills program and give back, because that's how they learned how to skate. And as they progressed, they moved into group figure skating classes and then private lessons. So they each have private coaches.
How much do you girls skate a week?
We usually skate about 4 days a week.
Like a couple of hours at a stretch? Cool. Is that, when you say that, are you out there just for fun, or are you working for those 2 hours with someone who's coaching you?
Sometimes we just work alone, and sometimes we have a coach with us.
And then, do you skate to music?
Yes.
Who picks the music?
Usually us.
Ah, so you get to pick your own stuff. What do you like to skate to?
I like to skate to things from maybe movies or by my favorite composer, because they're easy to interpret.
Who's your favorite composer?
Probably Mozart.
Oh, my. Well, wonderful. And how about you?
I like skating to classical music or movie music, like Meredith. And my favorite composer? I don't know. I like a lot of composers. So that would be a hard choice, I think.
A quick question for your mom. Melissa, when you came up from Rhode Island, the kids had gotten into skating. Had you gotten them into skating, or was that something, was that part of your growing up?
I didn't really skate when I was growing up back in Pennsylvania, but the girls were about 3 the first time we got them out on the ice, and we moved here when they were 4, and then we just started skating. Actually, Catherine corrected me, I'm sorry, they were still 3 when we got here. And then we started going to tot skates, and they started taking tot lessons, like Pam mentioned, and moved up that way. So it started out as something fun to do, and they really enjoyed it, and we've supported them to skate as much as they can.
And now Mom skates too.
And I skate, and I also am part of one of the coaches for basic skills. I teach the 4- and 5-year-olds.
Now, Meredith and Catherine, you're actually teaching as well?
Mm-hmm. We help out on Saturdays.
And so on Saturday, how many students are out? How many other skaters are on the ice?
10.
Okay. And so when all this is going on, can you tell me what you would be doing, or either one of you, what would you be doing with the folks that you're working with?
Usually we'd help place beanbags out to play games with them, or just help them if they needed help. And usually go play games with the more advanced end of the class, so that they, the younger kids could get a little more help until they were ready to go do more things.
Now, a lot of our, especially at the younger ages, we try to teach a lot through play, and so they're great help because they love to play too, and so Meredith and Catherine will be out there playing with some of them, and it's a lot more fun for, especially the tots, to just think they're playing a game rather than learning something important.
Back when you started out, do you remember if there were girls like what you're doing now who were working with you?
Yes, I think there were. Yeah, I don't really remember because I was really small, but I think there were, yes, I think so.
So Pam said that you guys are giving back. How's that feel?
It's really fun. I like watching other people learn how to skate and having fun, too. And I don't know, it's just fun to teach, so.
Pam, what else is will the group do for the rest of the season? What kinds of activities and shows and things like that were you?
So we actually just had our holiday recital at the beginning of December. So unfortunately, if you missed that, it was a great, great event. Everybody did just such fun, beautiful programs. It was exciting to be a part of. But we're going to have a basic skills and figure skating competition in February, the end of February. And a lot of the kids who are in the basic skills level get to compete doing the skills that they're learning, as well as the figure skaters. So it's fun for all levels and abilities to come to and to come and watch. It's free to watch. We'll also have our annual spring recital. It's the end of April, probably the 25th to the 26th. Around that period of time, we don't have a theme quite decided yet, but it's always a great show. We get a lot of support. We usually have one or two guest artists that come in who are high-level skaters that excite all of our skaters as well as the crowds. In addition, Meredith and Catherine have just been named to be part of the Figure Skating Arctic Winter Games Team Alaska.
Oh.
So we're very excited. There are only 18 members that will be part of the Arctic Winter Games in figure skating from Team Alaska, and they'll compete against the other contingents that come to the games, and that's in Fairbanks, March 15th to the 22nd. So we're excited about the Arctic Winter Games, and there are tons of sports that I hope people in Southeast get to make the trek up to Fairbanks to watch, and I'll be coordinating the figure skating aspect of the program there.
Mm-hmm. So you were both selected as part of the team. That must be fairly exciting for you.
Yes, it really is exciting.
What did you have to do how did they judge you into the team?
We had to write a paragraph about why we wanted to represent Alaska in the Arctic Winter Games, and then also fill out a paper of the past competitions that we've been to the last 2 years.
And what places we were in also.
And what skills that you can do, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
When they go to the Arctic Winter Games, what kinds of things will the team do there?
So there actually is a team event where the contingents compete against each other, where each member of the team will have a specific skill that they have to perform, hopefully better than the others. And then they'll also do they'll have two programs, a short program and a long program at each of the levels. They're at level one, so they're at the entry level, and there are four levels of competition.
You're going to select your own music for the programs?
Well, we have some music selected. We just have to cut it and make sure that all our moves fit into it, and then it will be ready.
Oh, cool. So this is just like the Olympics.
Actually, you know, it is very much akin to the Olympics. It's the Olympics for the Arctic nations. There are 20 different sports, some of which are not necessarily what you would consider Arctic sports, like basketball and gymnastics, but there are lots of different, you know, indoor and outdoor sports, and it's an amazing thing to be a part of. There's an opening ceremony and a closing ceremony, and they get to march in a parade of athletes in their, you know, Team Alaska uniforms. I have been to the last two, and it is so special to be a part of, and I'm excited that these girls get to do that.
Do you know if the other people are selected from Juneau that will be going up to the Arctic Winter Games?
I think I've heard of a couple of other athletes. There are definitely some from hockey and soccer, and it runs the gamut. I don't know specifically because I don't think yet our press release literally went out today about figure skating, and I think soccer went out maybe a day or two ago. So there's still sports that probably need athletes. If anybody's interested, they could go to the teamalaska.org webpage and find out whether people are still needed for sports. And if anybody's interested in attending or knowing more about the Arctic Winter Games, they can go to awg2014.org, and that's the Fairbanks Host Society page.
Now, your next classes that people can sign up for are?
Yes. So Juneau Skating Club will hold Session 3 starting January 6th, the week of January 6th. And it's a six-week program. And you come either Friday nights for 1 hour or Saturday midday for 1 hour. And it's part lesson, part practice. And it's super, super fun. We have a lot of adults that are still new to skating, and it's great fun to learn with other people.
So this is, you have to pre-register for this, right?
Yes, you can go to the Juneau, well, it's www.junoskatingclub.org, and then you click on registration, and you can follow the registration process. It's pretty simple.
What's the cost?
cost?
The cost is $90 for 6 weeks, and if you register early, there is an early registration discount. I believe that's by the 6th of January for the early registration discount.
All right. Well, Catherine, Meredith, congratulations on being selected as part of the Winter Games.
Thank you.
Now, go forth and represent Juneau in good form, I guess. Thank you so much. Thanks, Pam, for bringing everybody down.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 13th of December, 2013. It's the birthday of Ross McDonald, Los Gatos, California, 1915, author of the Lou Archer mystery novels. It was McDonald who wrote the line, "Never sleep with anyone whose troubles are worse than your own." He wrote by hand in spiral-bound notebooks, about 3 pages a day, sitting in the same bedroom chair, working on several books at once, sometimes getting ideas by going to criminal trials. It's the birthday of Heinrich Heine, born in Dusseldorf, Germany, 1797, one of the most popular German poets of the 19th century. Many of his poems set to music by Schubert, Schumann, Mendelssohn, and Brahms. It was Heinrich Heine who said the Romans would never have found time to conquer the world if they had been obliged first to learn Latin. It's the birthday of the poet James Wright, born Martins Ferry, Ohio, 1927. His father worked at the same glass factory for 50 years. His mother left school at 14 to work in a laundry. James went to Kenyon College on the GI Bill, graduated Phi Beta Kappa, became a teacher, taught at the University of Minnesota, McAllister College, Hunter College. He loved teaching, considered it a high art. His first book of poetry was The Green Wall in 1957. He died in 1980 of cancer of the tongue. James Wright, who said, "Being a poet sometimes puts you at the mercy of life, and life is not always merciful." And it's the birthday of the playwright Mark Connelly, McKeesport, Pennsylvania, 1890, author of the play Green Pastures. Once sitting at lunch, a man felt Connelly's bald head and said, "Why, your head feels as smooth as my wife's behind." And Connelly reached up and felt his own head and said, "So it does, so it does." Here's a poem for today by Stephen Dunn entitled Mercy. The music was fidgety, arch, an orchestral version of a twang. Welcome to atonal hell, welcome to the execution of a theory, I kept thinking, thinking, thinking. I hadn't felt a thing. Was it old-fashioned of me to want to, or were feelings as usual part of the problem? The conductor seemed to flail more than lead, his baton evidence of something unresolved, perhaps recent trouble at home. And though I liked the cellist, especially the way she held her instrument, unless you had a taste for unhappiness, you didn't want to look at the first violinist's face. My wife whispered to me, "This music is better than it sounds." I reminded myself the world outside might be a worse place than where I was now, though that seemed little reason to take heart. Instead, I closed my eyes, thought about a certain mezzo-soprano who could gladden a sad day anywhere, but one January night in Milan went a full octave into the beyond. Sometimes escape can be an art, or a selfishness, or just a gift you need to give yourself. Whichever, I disappeared for a while, left my body behind to sit there, nod, applaud at the appropriate time. Mercy, a poem by Stephen Dunn from his collection What Goes On, published by W.W. Norton, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org, and by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My next two guests have just arrived by tiny airplanes, and then they were pumped up out in the hallway to full size. It's amazing. We have two members of the Gastineau Aero Modelers here, Craig Osborne and Kirk McBride. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
So, little airplanes. Well, maybe not so little. 80-inch wingspans we were talking about before we opened
I've got a couple that have 80-inch wingspans.
Is that right? Yeah. So you have this facility out by the glacier that has been up, I guess you've had a runway out there since around 2003.
Yeah, about 10 years.
Yeah, and the next event that you're going to be showing off model airplanes at a little bit is you're part of Nugget Mall's kind of pre-Christmas open houses, and you're in the mall this weekend, right?
Yes, we have a yearly mall show that gives us a chance to bring equipment down, flight simulators, airplanes, helicopters, cars, pretty much all radio-controlled type equipment. Gives a chance to get out to the public, let the public have a chance to look at some of the different equipment that's out there in the market. There's been a lot of change in technology over the years. Gives people, the younger people, have a chance to come in and get on a flight simulator and actually be able to run some stuff and get an idea of what it's about. And like I said, with the advance in technology on the airplanes and the equipment and the associated equipment that goes with it, has just gone leaps and bounds in the last, I would say, 4 or 5 years. Probably one of the biggest increases that we've seen is battery technology. Batteries with your lithium polymer batteries, and you know, the old NiCads and stuff are gone to the past. And you've got high discharge batteries that are able to sustain heavy airplanes for a longer period of time.
There's also some size gain with the little teeny batteries and engines or motors that are available now, electric motors. So we've actually got planes that can fly indoors in small, very small spaces.
Yes, they're called microflies. I mean, they've got stuff. Plantco makes airplanes actually down to about the size of a book of matches. Full radio control, four access. I got throttle, pitch, elevator, aileron control. The batteries, you know, they're as small as the head of a pencil eraser, rechargeable LiPo batteries. So you're able to get the small technology out there to and have the power to be able to run them.
The other thing is there's been this big insurgence of helicopters. They were fairly rare, I think, when I first was aware of radio-controlled modeling back in the 70s or so. So this is kind of new as well. Is that because of the new technology?
Well, yeah, the helicopter, it's, and, you know, because of the flybarless systems and the...
The what?
It's called flybarless systems, which is... It just uses one less aspect for keeping the helicopter under control. And it's also the advance in technology in gyro stabilization. You get three-axis gyro stabilization that will stabilize the helicopter in three different axes. So it's really made it available to a lot more people because it is easier and the technology is out there to allow people to be able to do that.
And then you're flying some large planes, and that technology changed a great deal in the larger aircraft?
Not a whole lot in the larger ones, except for in the transmitter technology. You can program your transmitters now, or your radio, basically, to do several different things as far as speed, you know, the amount of throw that's on the control surfaces makes it a little easier to fly. A little more controlled.
If someone, you know, got interested in modeling and wanted to kind of find their way into it, about how long would a person have to practice before they were competent to fly. I'm not sure if that's the right term, but I mean...
Actually, that is a good term, and it is a very excellent question, because we're going to go back to the technology thing again. A standard person that's never had an RC box in their hands ever could go purchase an airplane, which was called safe technology in it, and you could fly the very first time.
Hmm.
With the technologies out there and the safe technology, you would actually have to force the airplane into the ground. You would actually literally have to make the decision to push the sticks and hold it long enough to crash it. If you let go of the sticks, the airplane will automatically level itself.
This is a big change from what I remember about aero modeling, because you spent most of your time with glue in the side room putting the plane back together. That was the big activity of flying, was figuring out how to patch the wreck up after it dove into the ground. So this sounds like a much more novice friendly hobby.
It's extremely novice friendly. I'm a perfect example of it. I started flying about March of this year. I bought a flight simulator that comes with a regular radio practice for about a week and a half on it, and went out to the field with my first plane and could fly. Didn't always get it back the same time, but I was flying the foam ones that are a little more forgiving. And yet, put those in the ground, you can always tape them back together and fly again.
Now, I was really surprised. I was at Auk Bay Harbor this summer, and a friend of mine came walking down off the bay, and he had just flown a four-engine drone.
Quad chopper.
Yeah, out to take pictures of whales. And he'd come back off the boat, and he was loading it into his car, and I looked in the seat of the car, and I saw this thing sitting there, and I thought, that's weird. And he told me he had a camera mounted on the thing, and he was taking aerial pictures of whales breaching out in the Gastineau Channel, or out in the in the whaling grounds. So tell me about these small drones that are becoming available. The quad chopper, you called it?
Yeah, the quad chopper technology has been out there for a long time. It's just that it's in the last, I would say, the last 2 years, it's really taken off. I mean, you can go purchase a fully operational, ready-to-fly, quad chopper that will sit in the palm of your hand that's got full video and still fixture capability for under $200.
Hmm.
They're fully stabilized. Of course, the video quality is not super high, but you're still able to take video and still pictures. And it's going to continue to advance. I mean, you can there was an article in the newspaper last night about, possible federal regulations being loosened up on unmanned aircraft and airspace. And the only thing that's holding back that technology right now is they do not have avoidance technology fully capable yet. So you can program a quad chopper to take off on a GPS coordinates, fly up to a specific altitude, hit a return home switch, and that thing will fly back and land within 10, 15 feet of you from the GPS technology on board, fully stabilized, everything. There's video footage of you guys taking quad choppers, 7,000-8,000 feet, full video, bringing it back and landing within 10 feet of themselves, fully autonomous.
But you said avoidance technology. What's
avoidance
the
technology
there?
Basically keeps them from running into anything. You can program GPS coordinates to take off, go to a certain spot, come back, land, take off, and all this other stuff. But if something gets in its way, it's not going to know it's there. It'll run into it.
Mm.
Potentially another flying, an aircraft or a, any sort of obstacle happens to get in the way. So there's no obstacle avoidance right now. That's one of the biggest things that's holding the technology back right now.
And it sounds like this is something that's being worked on?
Yes, it's definitely being worked on. It's like any new technology on the market. It's in its infancy right now. And the programs and the computers that it takes to run it are so big that it's not practical to have them on a quad chopper small enough to be able to pick it up and carry it. So I would see within the next probably year or two, as the advancement in the technology and the electronics get smaller, they'll have it. It'll happen. And, there's so much more uses for it. And right now there's a lot of restrictions. You've got, federal aviation restrictions, and a lot of it's that where we fly is under 400 feet just to keep out of the, priority airways.
Mm-hmm. But the units could go higher if avoidance technology becomes...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's basically sky's the limit. And the car, and, you know, the only thing, literally speaking, it is the only thing that holds back the height of, you know, and the duration of any flight time on is, of course, your battery capacity.
Yeah. Huh. An amazingly different hobby than the one that I remember back when we used to hook wires to the wings of the aircraft and stand in the middle and let it circle around over.
We still have people in the flight control line, and actually, control line is still a really big part of the hobby of RC. There's a lot of places that have gotten restricted as far as flying, overhead flying, sound restrictions, stuff like that. So they've gotten into a lot more control line usage.
So, guys, when are folks going to be able to talk to you about RC modeling?
Come on down to the Nugget Mall tomorrow. We'll be there. Doors will be open 11 to about 5 o'clock. We'll be there all day. Come down and sign up. We've got a free airplane we're giving away. Ask questions. If you've got any equipment you don't understand, radios, airplanes, helicopters, whatever it is, bring it on down. We'd like to take a look at it. We'd like to talk to you about it.
Gastineau Aero Modelers. Craig Orsborn, Kirk McBride, going to be at the mall all day tomorrow. Drop by at Nugget Mall and have a conversation about this hobby and see if maybe it's something you want to get involved in. Gents, a little old-timey airplane music to go out with you.
And I damn near didn't come back again. I didn't go very fast on a steam-powered airplane. Oh, the wheel went around and up and down and inside and then back again. Sitting in 747 just watching them clouds roll by. Can't tell if it's sunshine or if it's rain. Hey, hey. Rather be sitting in a deck chair high up over Kansas City on a genuine old-fashioned authentic steam-powered aerial plane.
About 12 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. Quick second reminder, there is less than an hour to go to vote for Eagle Crest in Powder Magazine's Ski Town Throwdown. So you need to go out to the Eagle Crest website at skijuneau.com. When we opened up the microphones at the beginning of the program, we were 200 votes behind Crested Butte. So people, you need to get to the website and vote for Eagle Crest so we can become Powder Mountain's Ski Town Throwdown winner. Hey, my next two guests have nothing to do with snow. However, I'm sorry?
Lots to do with the Ski Town. We're supporters.
Yeah.
We voted.
Good. Well, all should vote, I guess. Anyway, Bernadette Rosano is here with Becca Parks, and they work with STEM on these wonderful outreach programs that bring the kids of Juneau, not just the kids, I guess, the adults as well, into contact with technology here and make science and like that.
We really try to foster a home for inventors, and that's what our workshop does. It's a pretty raw space where really it's fueled by imagination. And I've come up with a couple ideas to help kids feel inspired, and that's what the little electric stuffed animals are all about. So kids who want to make something and want to take it home can come in, spend a couple hours. You don't really need to know how to sew. You don't really need to know anything about electronics. That's what I'm here for, to help you along. And you walk away with a pretty cool little toy that you would find in a gift shop and be able to buy, but you made yourself.
There are posters up around town that show a couple of these things, like a little bird, I think, that's got glowy eyes and
yeah.
like that. Yeah. Yeah. So basically you're sewing like light-emitting diodes into the fabric. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have a little chip, and it has a coin battery with a switch, and we just wire up some LEDs attached to it, and you're good to go. You just sew it up and put some filler in there, and you've got yourself a toy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty fun little gift for girls to come in and work on, and we also have a musical pencil for boys who want to come in and learn how to solder. It's a really great way because you get to walk away with a magical pencil that makes sounds. I mean, how exciting is that, right? Everybody wants that.
Not right. teachers, but...
right.
Now, Becca, you're involved with the ongoing LEGO League program, right?
Yes, I am.
So we've talked about the LEGO Robotics a bit here, because I usually have guests on Tuesdays who come from the school system, and they're very, very involved in that. Can you give me an idea of the range of the programs that are available through STEM?
I sure can. So STEM, the Juneau Economic Development Council, is the affiliate partner for this group called FIRST. It's for Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology. It's this worldwide robotics league. So just like you have FIFA looking over soccer and football, we have FIRST looking over this robotics league, and they have teams ranging from 6 years old up through high school and rely on older college and adult mentors. We've got Junior FIRST LEGO League, and we'll have three of those teams out at an expo tomorrow at our big regional champion or regional qualifier, and they're ages 6 to 8. The FIRST LEGO League, which is ages 9 to 14 in the U.S., and we'll have 19, hopefully 19 teams in, depending on the weather and whether or not Huna can make it in. And then we've got four high school teams in Juneau, also out at Thunder Mountain High School, all coached by a very, very dedicated teacher and a small group of mentors that are part of that high school league.
And you said there's a regional qualifier tomorrow?
Yes.
And can people drop in to see this?
Oh, people definitely should. It's my favorite Juneau event of the year. It's called the Juneau Robot Jamboree. Hopefully you've seen the marquee down at Centennial Hall. And like I said, 19 teams, so almost 200 kids ages 9 to 14 that have built and programmed their own LEGO robots to complete a table full of missions that are all related to natural disasters. And they've also done a project, a research project, where they're doing that inventor side of things, coming up with something that's going to help our community deal with natural disasters. And all that happens tomorrow from 9 to 5 at Centennial Hall. But the best time for spectators to show up is really anytime after 12:45. That's when our opening ceremonies for the robot matches is. And we'll be right in that first ballroom on the right when you go in the front doors of Centennial Hall. And we've got Andy Klein coming down to do play-by-play. It's a really exciting thing. Kids and adults, everyone I know that stopped by loves it. And you can learn a lot about what these kids have been doing after school on weekends. They've put in a lot of time since the season started.
Give us an idea of what it would look like if we decided to drop in at 12:45 or 1-ish or so when you actually got the robots out on the floor.
Sure. There are four robot tables side by side, and you're going to see teams of 10 kids carrying this one special LEGO robot like it's a dozen eggs. I mean, they have to be very careful because there'll be at least one that drops and breaks, and there'll be LEGOs all over the floor. But they've got crazy arms and big attachments that all have to fit within a 12-inch cube. And then they get to go up and run this robot, and they have 2.5 minutes to send that robot out. It's autonomously programmed to climb over LEGO walls, to hit different switches, or to carry pieces from one side of the board to another. All the missions are sort of interwoven, so every team is going to do things a little bit differently. They can pick what they do first, what they attempt, and what they don't. They're the natural disaster themes. They're trying to connect people in different parts of the board, bring supplies somewhere else, raise a house up so it's safe from a flood, release a plane that can get over a runway to deliver supplies to somebody who might have been affected by a natural disaster. And the biggest thing that you're going to see is kids going up to the table, doing their best for that 2.5 minutes. And you'll see some cry at the table. You'll see jumping and cheering. But the best part to me is that you'll see them grab their robot at the end of the match and sprint back to what we call the pit, similar that you'd see at a NASCAR race, and make those last-minute adjustments. And instead of having that match and then sort of throwing their hands down and being done for the day, they're going to go back and keep working and refining their plans and doing that on-the-spot critical thinking that we think is so great about the program.
You said the theme that this is themed around natural disasters, responses to natural disasters. Can you give me an idea how that theme works in relationship to what the kids are doing on the table?
Sure. So the table is really the hook. That's where they design these missions that the robot has to do, and each one has to do with some element of either how a natural disaster can affect a region or what someone can do in response to it. But the meaning of the challenge and the work the kids are doing related to the challenge is deeper, and you don't get to see it when you're just there watching the tournament. Each one of those teams has researched a specific natural disaster and the way that that affects their community. So whether it's here, whether it's all of Alaska, whether it's the United States. And then they come up with their own solution to how they can help to fix that problem. And they actually go out and figure out whether or not their solution is viable. So I know there's one group that was working on a communications pod to help connect people in rural areas from a disaster when normal communications that we have might be down. I know that we have other people that have looked at creating apps, or one that's looking at avalanche, how to protect yourself just as a pedestrian, even if you get stuck under an avalanche. So they're doing those, and then they're following through on it. So it's that place-based learning where they're trying to really come up with something that's part of their lives that they can connect to, but then do all of that problem-solving that we want to see people in their careers working on, too, where they're actually weighing cost-benefit of certain designs and talking to people about what really is feasible and whether or not their ideas will work, what research has already been done, what other solutions are out there that they can build on. And that project, they get judged in the morning, and we've got a great team of community volunteers that are coming to lead those judging crews. And then they'll deliberate on that and give out some awards for the projects in the afternoon, too.
Now, Bernadette, what kind of follow-up is there for the programs that you were talking about earlier, like the sewing project and the other project?
Right, right.
Does that follow on into something else?
Yeah, well, currently we host the Saturday thing where kids can come in and work on different projects of their liking. And we're also going to be starting a workshop series. For instance, for the Draudio, the musical pencil, kids can sign up. It's going to start on Tuesday, December 31st. And you just go to stemak.org and search for workshops under the For Kids section, and you should be able to see there's dates of the workshops and times when we're going to be hosting it. And you just register, and you come on in. And it's going to be, for the Draudio specifically, 4 workshops, an hour each long.
The Draudio is the musical pencil?
Yes.
Okay. All right. No, I wasn't clear on what it was called. Okay. So is this a drop-in thing? Or it's not clear to me how a child or anyone who's interested becomes mm-hmm. involved mm-hmm. in your program.
Well, we have had a lot of drop-ins recently just because we've kind of been getting our name out there. But we do have a website that if people go to, you just look for the Saturday thing. It starts at 10 o'clock, runs from 10 to 1, and you'd register online or you can come in, and it's sort of a pay-as-you-can right now. We have a suggested donation of $20, which kind of helps us resupply everything that we need to help kids build anything that they desire. And for the workshops, remember to go online again and look for the For Kids section, and you should register online. So registering online really gives me a good idea of what to prepare for, what kind of student I'm going to have come in, the age, and what their interests are.
And that website is stemak.org, if anybody's having trouble finding it.
Terrific. Okay, so STEM. The regional qualifier for the robotics thing is tomorrow, 9 to 5 at Centennial Hall. Show up about 12:45 if you want to watch the real heat of the competition here. And ongoing programs through STEM Outreach, get a hold of Bernadette Rosano, and she'll guide you into either making an electric doll or possibly a musical pencil. Wonderful, wonderful activities for the holiday time and all
for
that
sure.
sort of stuff. Thank you so much for telling us what's going on.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
As a girl, I was taught the importance of respect for my family, respect for myself. Today, I see domestic violence and sexual abuse hurting our children. If you or someone you love is a victim of domestic violence or sexual assault, there is help. Asking for help changes everything. Real Alaskans, choose respect.
Visit andvsa.org or call 1-800-799-SAFE.
As a special way to commemorate KTOO's 40th anniversary, Juno artist Constance Baltuk has created a special limited edition print from her painting titled Waterfall, Salmon Creek. We're offering 200 prints signed and numbered by the artist as a 40th anniversary fundraising gift for KTOO. To learn more, visit ktoo.org.
And you are in tune with KTOO.org. It's just almost 4 o'clock. We translate our signal on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K21AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes to you from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and thank you very much, listeners like you. Joan Pardis will be hosting Juneau Afternoon on Monday. She'll bring Kim Kiefer in to talk about CGBJ activities right now. We'll get a look at this year's downtown charity walk, the 12 Trees of Christmas, so you can vote on trees around town. Joan Kramers will be here to highlight Thursday's winter solstice celebration at the planetarium, and we'll talk to Jenny Fremlin from Alaska Litho about upcoming Facebook workshops for businesses. So the usual features, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more tomorrow when Joan Pardis hosts Juneau Afternoon.